we made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey!
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf, here on the We Made This Podcast Network. We are doing some specials before Series 6. In fact, we're indulging ourselves with arguably too many specials before Series 6.
You fucking planned them.
I did. That was all me. I'm Mark Adams, by the way. I'm your host. And with me at this time, you've already heard him shout at me. It's Colin Jackson Brown.
Hello.
And Carl Bryan is here as well.
Kadoogle doogle 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 day, Mark.
For fuck's sake, you totally planned that.
That's how he always greets people.
Thing is, it might be from now on.
It's what people from Derby do.
It's true, yeah.
So yeah, that was a clue. A blatant clue as to what we're doing today. I even referenced Series 5 there. I'm so good. We're doing the Tongue Tied extended promo video, which, if you haven't heard of it, is a beautiful piece of random Red Dwarf oddity stuff that you might not have heard of. I didn't do very well there, did I?
It's a curio.
Curio, that's a good word, Colin. It's definitely a curio. And it's the kind of thing you wouldn't have heard of existing unless you were a bit of an obsessive and you had a podcast and you liked doing weird shit.
Even if you were, in my case, because I didn't know it existed at the time, but we'll get into that in a bit.
Yeah, it reminds me of when comedians would release their VHS at Christmas time and it was the one that was too hot for TV where they may swear like Smith and Jones or Lenny Henry or someone like that. This is the extended version. There's no swearing in it, but it reminds me of that time when if you wanted something special, you released it on VHS.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the idea was that it advertised the single release. And yeah, I don't remember seeing it at the time whatsoever.
No, which I wonder if this actually to buy it on VHS would cost more than buying the single.
It would.
Oh,
it would
inevitably.
Been. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the VHS was probably $8.99, $9.99-ish.
Yeah.
At the time. Because it's not canonical Red Dwarf. It's not written by Grant Naylor. It is a Danny John Jules vanity project, basically. Mm.
It really does come across as a vanity project. And what I think we'll do is, so it is quite a, you know, an obscurity. We'll share on the socials, hopefully a couple of days before, but certainly after this is broadcast, a link to where you can watch it on YouTube. We'd also probably suggest that if you haven't listened to the album, the EP on Spotify, have a listen to that as well, because I will be referring to specific versions of the Tongue Tied song as we go through.
It was such a joyous moment when I realised that the entire thing is on Spotify.
Yeah, because regular listeners will know we've kind of already sort of looked at Tongue Tied anyway, but we looked at it very much from the single point of view.
This time is us looking at it. Last time we were just listening to it.
Good way of putting it. Yeah. So, yeah, as much as it will probably pain you, have a listen through. And if you can do it without skipping the tracks, I am proud of you. If you can't, that is okay, because, there's some tat.
I have a slight confession to make.
Go on.
I think I'm getting Stockholm Syndrome, because I don't hate the Tabby Ranks mix as much as I did previously.
I definitely hate the Tabby Ranks mix just as much as I did previously.
I did have a moment last night, I don't know whether I was tired or what, was like, this isn't as bad as I remember it was last time.
But you were definitely tired.
Yeah, maybe it was just... It just breaks you down.
It's Stockholm Syndrome. That's what it is.
The only good thing about the Tabby Ranks mix is the fact that it's called the Tabby Ranks mix and there's a cat pun. That is the only good thing.
Actually, the bass is pretty cool on it.
Oh, for fuck's sake, no. No.
The thing that gets me is it's blatant. Obviously, it's a parody of Shabba Ranks, but they went with Tabby Ranks instead of Tabba Ranks, which would have worked.
Well, you don't have a Tabba cat, do you? You have a Tabby cat.
You could have a Tabba Manx.
Yeah. Tabba Manx.
Shabba Manx. Shabba Manx would work.
I mean, I have a tabby cat, so I'm all about Tabby Ranks' name. My tabby cat is asleep next to me, so if you can hear a general...
What did she think of the remix?
She did not stay in the room. She's got good taste.
Maybe that's...
But no, she snores, and so if you can hear a gentle purring in the background, that's because cat.
Maybe that's the thing. It's got a frequency in it that bizarrely just drives away cats.
Irony.
No, it's just crap, Carl.
Yeah.
Why I was saying it was a vanity project, this is the first bit of work ever done by Danny John Jules' own production company, which is KMBA Productions, which I believe stands for Kiss My Black Ass.
Nice. Oh, for goodness sake, of course it does.
Which is, it's still going. He's put out like short films and that kind of thing, like relatively recently, within the last decade or so. But this was the first thing.
I mean, having enjoyed Danny John Jules on Twitter and his gives literally zero shits attitude, call out racism, call out country.
Yeah.
I love that it's Kiss My Black Ass. And it's so Danny John Jules. And the more I learn about this man, the more I want to meet him, the more I want to give him a hug, and the more I want him to be a guest on my podcast. Be on my podcast, Danny John Jules.
He is awesome, definitely.
He really is. He really, really is.
It's weird how we're mentioning there that he calls out racism and things like that on his Twitter, because some of the content in the between songs, this is, it's a bit on the knuckle.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Are we both ready?
Yeah,
I think we're going to go through this. All right. So, a chap called Leo Davis introduces his story. He's the cleaner at Black Island Studios, and it's Friday the 13th. He cleans the studio with a funky version of the Red Dwarf theme in the background. Why wasn't the funky version of the Red Dwarf theme on the fucking single?
I've got this in my notes. It's like, where is this? Because it sounds like he's doing a really good version. And it's like, why did we have three different remixes?
It was on one of the formats.
Was it?
Yes. When the single was released, it had, I think there were about four or possibly even five different formats, all with different B-sides, because that was a way at the time to get a higher chart position, because you'd get people to buy everything. And I believe that it was on one of the formats. I am just double-checking. Right, the Red Dwarf theme instrumental was on the cassette single.
Right.
Right, because I had the CD single.
It wasn't on the 12-inch. Yeah, the CD single had seven tracks.
Bloody hell.
It's the 7-inch.
Right. Okay.
He's on the 7-inch single.
Because it's, I think you'll have that in front of you now. It's Doug Naylor and Rob Grant actually get credit for the lyrics, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think Howard Goodall gets credit for the music, even though it's a different version.
Yeah, the credits are composers Goodall, Grant, Naylor.
Yeah.
And then publisher is Noel Gay Music Company Limited.
Yeah. I did look into actually the engineers who were on this, because like, who worked on this? And one of them is someone who works with Bowie, or did work with Bowie.
What?
A good amount.
This tat
yeah.
was made by a Bowie producer, fuck's sake.
Or a Bowie engineer, but definitely somebody who worked on quite a few Bowie releases. And the other one was, he worked on a lot of things for a band I can't remember anything of, but I know remember the name is The Men Who, They Can't Hang.
Oh, yeah, The Men They Could Not Hang.
Yeah, I don't know if he's a member of the Men They Could Not Hang or if he just produced a lot of their stuff. So the people who were behind this have actually got pedigree. But it does make me wonder if they did the main track and then all the remixes were like Danny John Jules with Cool Edit Pro on his PC at the time.
Various mates.
Yeah.
The producer was a guy called Don E. he was already working with Danny John Jules prior to the Tongue Tied single on trying to launch a different music career, and they abandoned that and released this instead. So I think it was probably him that did a lot of the various mixes.
Right, okay.
Right. I mean, the excellent mixes, the wonderful mixes, everything about this is perfect. Be on my podcast, please, Danny John Jules. A black cat appears out of nowhere, and they watch Leo's favourite television programme together.
There's a bit I want to mention about the cat. He makes a big thing about saying he had this weird medallion around his neck, which they close up on. It's got a little like lightning strike design on it. He's never featured at all again in the rest of the thing. That comes to absolutely nothing.
No. The other thing as well is he says that he works nights because he's a somnambulist.
Yes.
Which means he's a sleepwalker. Which doesn't make sense. Because he keeps falling asleep through the video. So I'm guessing he means to say he's a
narcoleptic.
Narcoleptic, yeah.
But he says he's a somnambulist.
Oh, I'd not picked right, up on good. That at all. Brilliant. Yeah.
No, but you're right.
I think this is very much a Danny John Jules writing everything himself and not necessarily checking it. I know that there was, from reading some of the articles in the Smegazine about it, there were people turning up on the day and being given their lines, which had been written 10 minutes before.
Wow.
I've got in my notes, you get the feeling this is all Danny and he didn't write a second draft.
Yeah.
You are harsh. I think that's cruel. And Danny John Jules is very talented and that he should be on my podcast.
We absolutely love him, but I think he would agree that this maybe was slightly rushed.
Yeah.
So, I didn't put any of this in my notes. I put nice kitty, which is predictably me. But I also put insert black cat rant, and I'm indulge me, black cat rant. So,
is this going to be cat racism?
Exactly that. I used to work in an RSPCA cat sanctuary, and they struggled, like really, really struggled. Black and white cats would stay in the cattery for months on end. The moment you got a tabby cat or anything resembling a designer cat, they were gone within seconds. People would come and they'd see these black cats 100 times, and it didn't matter about the personality of the cat or anything like that. It was all about appearance with people adopting cats.
Was that a superstition thing? Because it might be people that think they're unlucky.
Yeah, and I think it's to do with the fact that people perceive tabby cats or tortoiseshell cats or whatever to be prettier than black cats. And this is across the board, across the country. It is much more difficult to rehome a black cat than it is to rehome any other cat.
It's a shame that that it's the black cats that get that prejudice, because they're, you know, there's no difference between a black cat and a tabby cat or a ginger cat. But those ones with no hair, they can fucking get in the sea. I don't like them.
Oh, I like the naked cats.
They're not right. They're not right. They're fucking little weird lizard bastard things.
I like them.
They're probably the only ones I can have because I'm allergic to cats.
That would probably be the case with me as well, but I don't want one.
Yeah. Oh, but look at them. They look so skinny because they've got no fur.
They look like fucking Yoda with pink skin.
Oh, no, right. So have you seen the breed is Sphinx. Have you seen the Sphinx cats that are black? Because if, and I know this because I had to shave my cat because she wasn't very well and needed a pregnant lady scan. What's that called?
Ultrasound.
So they had to shave my cat. And I know this is true because they shaved my cat. And if you shave a cat, their pattern underneath the fur is their skin colour. So if you've got a tabby cat, they've got tabby skin. And it works with tigers as well.
And zebras. So,
yes. So any cat that, like, if you've got a black and white cat and you shaved it, it would be black and white underneath. And so you get these Sphinx cats that would have been black if they had hair, and they're just like black.
Does that mean that the freaky ass ones that I really don't like would have had pink fur?
No, they'd have been white. So my cat hat is tabby and white, and obviously underneath her white fur is like pink skin, like if you shave a white person.
Right, yes.
You know, we're not actually white, are we? We pink.
Yeah, that's fair. But we don't have white hair.
I don't think there's any more of a statement that you are a gay man than, oh, what's it called? That thing, pregnant lady scan.
At the time, I was really fucking stressed. My poor kitty had a bad tummy. I described it accurately.
Yeah, yeah. It's a scan of a pregnant lady. Yeah,
that works. Yeah.
Should we continue? Anyway, Quigg doesn't quite show up yet, but he does in a bit.
Yeah. He does. But yeah, black cat rant. Consider that my black cat rant. If you want a cat, adopt a black cat. They can be just as affectionate and as lovely. And oh, I've met some lovely black cats. There's one down the road that if you fuss him, he purrs like a buzzsaw. And he gets so excited that he gets on his back legs to collect it when you stroke him.
The problem is that cats are rubbish.
Get in the sting.
I used to live with three as fuckers.
In the sea. Cats are the best.
I am not a pet person.
Right, we will move on because you upset me.
Good. That was my aim.
So the Katioki mix plays over some claymation. The claymation features the cat, Dwayne Dibley, and some generic women.
And for 1993, even though it was 1993, this is really shitty claymation.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was done by fans, though.
Was it? Danny should have turned it down.
I think this is the claymation video that was done by fans that Hattie Hayridge bought at the convention that we were talking about in one of the earliest magazines.
Good grief.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think that was a claymation Red Dwarf video that was made by fans. So I might be putting two and two together and getting 497. But
if it's made by fans, fair enough, I'll retract that statement. If it was made by a professional company for this video, they should have been ashamed of themselves.
Again, my notes weren't particularly subtle on this. I wrote, shit morph. Yeah. I mean, I laughed at my own joke in a similar way to you when I wrote it, Colin, because it looked like Morph was the 80s and it was significantly better than this.
Yeah, but it was made by Tony Hart, who was a very, very good artist.
True.
I recently did get the chance to watch the new Morph with my friend's kids. I was looking after his kids for the morning and I was watching Morph. It's still great.
Is it claymation still?
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Aardman have got it.
Good. Yeah.
They were probably the only people you can imagine taking it over and doing a good job.
Yes.
Yeah. That's actually really good. I'm pleased about that.
Thing I never realised that Morph's mate was called Chaz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never knew that.
Chaz had a deep voice and I think I low-key kind of had a bit of a crush on Chaz when I was younger. In a kind of like, he was a bit like a bear, wasn't he? You know, like gay bears. He was a bit like that. And I think I low-key had a bit of a crush on Chaz.
I suppose he could be quite a good partner because you can mould him into exactly what you wanted him to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Actually, that's really fucking toxic as fuck because that's not him having his own personality. Don't do that.
Exactly.
If you ever turn around and go, I can change him, you actually can.
Oh, dear me. So, Leo is woken up from his dream by his boss, Mr. Walker, who has two clients with him, and he gets told off. He's then racially abused and told to clean up and get rid of the cat.
So, do you know who the actor playing the boss is?
No.
That is Willie Morrison, who's Danny John Jules' agent.
And good grief.
He wasn't an actor, as you can probably tell from his delivery, which is fucking terrible. But he does have an excuse because he turned up on the set that morning and was given his lines and didn't even know that he was going to be in the fucking thing at all.
God. Brilliant.
It doesn't sound like Danny John Jules was a particularly helpful client.
No. And everybody in it was doing it as a mate. They were doing it for free.
Yeah.
Right.
I think when you watch the credits at the end, you go, a lot of people whose last name is John Jules.
That's the kids. Yeah, all the kids dancing in the video were like his nieces and nephews and people like that.
Brilliant. Of course they were.
In my notes I've got here, this stage manager is, and then in all caps, racist.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's the line? Because this line gets repeated. Because part of this video is that Leo keeps waking up to the same situation. Initially, because it was me that found this video on YouTube, it's in four parts, and they've kind of cut it to the point where each part begins with Leo waking up.
Yeah.
And getting racially abused.
Yeah, the same scene happens again and again. And initially I was like, oh, it's a cock-up. I've picked the same video like three times or something. But it's the line where it says, or we can chuck you back out on the street with the other brothers.
Is it, you'll be back out on the street corner with the other brothers, which is potentially even worse.
Back out on the street corner with all the other brothers. And when it got to the third time, I was like, does it need to be in there three times? You know, I know it's like almost like a Groundhog Day thing, but does that line need to be there? Because it's quite uncomfortable.
It really was.
But at the same time, it was written by Danny John Jules, and that's what he wanted to put in there. That's fine. He's got other bits in there that are, you know, relating to racism and his sort of perception of how he's been treated and how other black people had been treated in the world in the UK at that time.
Yeah, it's not subtle, and it's very Danny John Jules.
Yeah.
He doesn't get his comeuppance. That's the thing that gets me, is the manager doesn't really get any... There's nothing to get back at him about. We'll get to it when we get to the end, because this is a very strange edit.
Isn't that the point? That basically Danny John Jules is pointing out that people be racist and don't get their comeuppance.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I mean, it seems a bit much for a pop music video, but...
Well, it's bleak, but, you know, I suspect the man's experience has been quite bleak if he's portraying racism like this.
I don't think he was viewing it as this as he was making it as a pop video. I think he was viewing this as a short film surrounding, like, framing the videos that he's made, because it's the first thing that he's done for his production company. So I think this is more of a labour of love kind of thing for him.
It's just weird for me, because his reaction, his character's reaction when he's on the other brothers, it's almost quite light. He's almost like, do you know what I mean? I suppose if he's experienced it, sometimes you just kind of shrug it off. Because I know he's talked about doing, you know, he used to do like Blackpool Pier with Jimmy Tarbuck and stuff like that. And
yeah.
But yeah, it caught me off guard a bit when I watched it initially.
I think it's deliberately unpleasant.
Yeah.
But going back to what you said about framing a short film around the songs, doesn't that make it Danny John Jules' Mamma Mia?
Danna Mia.
I've not seen any of the Mamma Mia films and do not intend to.
Oh, mate, it really is just, we've got some ABBA songs, let's write a plot around it that doesn't really make much sense and is a bit shit. Oh, look, it's James Bond singing ABBA.
Yeah. It's not as good as Troll 2, though, is it? You know, I'll stick Aliens on instead.
I mean, as we're recording this, ABBA have just returned.
Yes.
And
with two very mediocre album tracks.
I've not heard them yet. But
they are mediocre album tracks at best.
Yeah, but somebody pointed out on Twitter, I think, that ABBA coming back means we're one step closer to Mamma Mia 3.
Not Mamma Mia 3, Mamma 3-a.
Oh, God.
I'm going to move on.
I think that's a good point.
Leo has fallen in love with the female client and confesses it to the cat. And the cat randomly turns into Elvis.
You should clarify that. It's not, as this is a Red Dwarf podcast, he's not confessing it to the cat from Red Dwarf. He's the little furry thing.
Yeah. The black cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the Elvis from Red Dwarf as well.
It is.
Yeah.
What?
It's a weird thing, this, because I think Colin's probably going to mention something a bit different from what I'm about to mention, but...
You go first, then.
Leo says to Elvis, is it true that you were a racist and an informant from the FBI? And again, in the kind of the tonal shift that I wasn't expecting, Elvis sidesteps the question?
Yes.
Yep.
And doesn't answer?
To be fair, he's fucking right. Elvis was a massive racist and an informant for the FBI. Although, I think it was the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms that he was an informant for.
Yeah, I could see him sort of sidestepping that question, but you think Elvis... But he does sort of go, anyone can change.
It's actually a brilliant line. Danny John Jewell says, was you really a racist and informer for J. Edgar Hoover? And he says, you've been listening to Public Enemy records, haven't you? Yeah. Which is right. Elvis was a hero to most, but he never meant shit to me. Straight up racist.
Yeah.
So fuck Elvis and fuck Clayton Mark, the guy that plays Elvis, because he's... Dear.
You're going to tell me something I'm not going to like, aren't you?
In jail for raping a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Going back to 2002, wasn't it? I was reading it last night.
So at this time, obviously, they didn't know anything about that.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, no, this was, what, 9 years before?
Exactly. That. He's a well-known Elvis impersonator at Blackpool Pier. So that's how he got the job in Red Dwarf. When Danny John Jules phoned him up, he didn't remember who Danny John Jules was. But then he reminded him, oh, I was off Red Dwarf. Because this was like 2 years later than Meltdown. So he...
I don't believe that, though. It was like, yeah, I don't remember that. It's like, it's probably your only major telly appearance.
Yes, yeah.
Mm. I genuinely didn't know that. And that's fucking horrible, man.
It is. Yeah. But yeah, the real Elvis probably would have done that as well. So,
so yeah.
We're going to get letters.
Good.
Well, yeah, anyway.
Remember, when you're writing your letters, my name's Matt Latham.
No, that's...
So we'll skip over the Elvis bit, because he's a cunt.
Yeah. Elvis's advice is sing to girls. Leo goes back to sleep and dreams a music video of the single edit.
Yes.
The cat sings with Holly, Queeg, Rimmer, Lister, Dwayne Dibley, Elvis, and Human Crichton as the backup singers.
Yes.
He wears a sharp tartan suit, a red tux, a white tailcoat and waistcoat, and has many, many attractive, ethnically diverse women dancing with him.
Yes. Basically, yes. It was a group of models who mostly were friends of his or friends of Vanessa Morris's, I believe. So Vanessa Morris is the model that's playing Kit, was a friend, possibly girlfriend, of Danny John Jules at the time. She was his plus one at the Red Dwarf 6 rap party.
Right.
And then he brought her along to play Kit in the whole tongue-tied thing.
And good on him, because she is a stunning woman.
She is an attractive lady.
There's a point where she kisses him, where he kept saying that he'd messed up the scene and had to retake that one again over and over again.
For sake.
But I don't think she minded.
No.
It
did, like you say, we mentioned that there's dancers there of all sort of races and everything. There's one shot in it where... I don't know why this stuck out to me, but the one redhead out of everybody, like bright ginger, appears in the background. It just takes over the shot. Passes Danny John Jules at the... No, just like red hair.
It's the contrast of the... Because it's the white background and it's quite high contrast with the colours. Yeah. I saw that and I was trying to work out who she was because I'm sure I recognised her.
Yeah.
And I worked out that what I actually thought, what it was reminding me of, is the really early Tori Amos videos where she's in a white background and her red hair is really high contrast against it. And it reminded me of that, but obviously she had a different face because she's a different person.
Yeah. I saw a picture online the other day. It was Tori Amos, I think PJ Harvey, and Bjork.
Yep.
All stood together and said, that's 1995 in a nutshell.
Q magazine cover in 1995. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic issue of Q. Really good interview in it. I'm a big fan of all three of them.
So you know how you were both talking about the attractive women and how you spotted a particular one that you liked, etc., etc. Would you like to know what I put in my notes?
Go on then.
Yeah.
Love the Cuban heels.
They're very nice heels. And the fact he mentions in the behind the scenes later on there, was it a size too small?
Yes.
Yeah. That'd totally hurt. Worth it for Cuban heels. For me, yeah. I'm 6'1", which is ever so slightly above average. If I get a pair of Cubans, I'm 6'3", and I look like a god. Yeah. I fucking love Cuban heels, and I need to get me some more.
Gods can be short too.
Nah.
Let's be fair though, Mark. In Cuban heels, there's a very fine line between looking like a god and giraffe on skates.
Fuck you.
You managed to pull it off, but all it takes is one bad day to look like Bambi on ice.
Oh, there you go. We pulled it back. I love you, Carl.
Love you too. this is the thing that this was the bit that had the budget.
Yeah.
And then everything
the Cuban heels.
No, yeah. But it does feel like they worked up to, what's his name? The costume designer for Red Dwarf, Howard
Jones.
Jones. They looked up and went, Howard, look over there. What? And then just took a load of stuff out of the Red Dwarf wardrobe department. But this bit feels like it's got the money, and then the stuff around it was shot on like Danny John Jules' own budget.
Yeah. No budget at all. You've also got, because you've got Hattie Herridge in there, it's the final appearance of Holly. I thought that Back to Reality was the final appearance of her as Holly, but it's this.
That's a shame. Was it the first time? Oh, no, it's not the first time they appeared together. It's probably the last time they ever appeared together.
Yeah, it's one of the two, as far as I know, unless there's anything. No, she hasn't come back in any of the Dave stuff, has she? So, no, she should do. Bring Hattie Herridge back. She's amazing.
I would love that.
And the thing that got me, as someone who comes from like a filmmaking background, is the shots of the heads and the shots of the dancers is just a little, the dancers, they're just a little too far away and they're not actually looking down the lens. They're looking just off for the most part. And that drove me mental during this.
I think that's particularly Craig Charles and Robert Llewellyn because they were panicking so much about the dance moves that they had to do. Apparently, the Red Dwarfs magazine at the time got about 6 months worth of content out of the Tongue Tied video and
fuck's sake.
There's like six issues. It's either five or six issues in a row where there's a different feature. Like, first of all, it's about the Cat's going to be releasing a single. Then it's got about him recording the single. And then there's at least two about the video.
I remember reading one about the video, yeah.
Yeah, so there's some quite cool bits of information in there about how low budget it was and how sort of thrown together on the day. The Holly scene, where you've got the four of them, so you've got Hattie Herridge, Norman Levett, Chris Barry, and you've also got Charles Organs in there as a forehead thing, not a forehead, four heads. Yeah. A bit like the Bohemian Rhapsody video, but the way that was recorded it was an electrical storage cupboard.
They didn't even have a green screen.
They didn't have a green screen. No. That was recorded in an electrical storage cupboard with the two behind standing on boxes and them all wearing black polo necks with a black sheet behind them, basically. Yeah.
It's in my notes about that shot. It basically says, well, Chris and Hattie look like they're trying. Like, Charles Organs looks like he wants to try, but he just can't be bothered. And Norman Lovett's mentally somewhere else. He's playing football. He's doing something. He's barely moving.
Yeah, they tried to get him to do some of the things that he'd done in the earlier Tongue Tied video from the series, like the bits where he got his ears to wiggle and he couldn't remember how they'd done it at the time. And it was, I believe it was bits of like fishing wire tied to his ears and somebody but yeah, so he didn't do that. So that's why he's got the sunglasses.
I would not have enjoyed fishing wire on my ears.
Everyone's got to have a hobby.
Well, yeah.
Suffer for your art, that shit.
Yeah. So anyway, Quig has already showed up.
He has. Dwayne randomly gets a cat action toy and the cat gets a kiss and that's how it ends the video. I'm glad that Dwayne got a toy. I don't understand why, but Dwayne did get a toy. Good for him. What's frustrating, right, is that we never got fucking Red Dwarf action figures and Dwayne Dibley's got one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like a complete set of non-existent Red Dwarf action figures. Perhaps when 3D printing is cheaper and everyone's got one.
I've probably mentioned this before, but did we ever work out whether Funko had done any yet?
No.
They haven't? No. There's people who've done...
custom ones and made them their own.
Because you can buy a blank Funko, can't you?
Possibly.
You can. I've seen them done. As people might know, I'm a wrestling nerd. Ring announcer, and I've seen local... Well, I am a nerd too. But I've seen, like, British wrestlers, like a smaller scale British wrestlers rather than the ones on WWE. They've had fans make, like, really very good Funkos, but you buy this blank Funko to custom your own, and it's pretty cool.
Has anyone ever made a Magic Mark one?
They haven't, no.
Well, that's a fucking disgrace.
I mean, I would quite like it. I would quite like it, I'll be honest. I would quite like it.
But which waistcoat?
Because I've got a gigantic ego. Anyway. Leo is woken up by Judge Dredd, who calls him a Nancy boy.
We need to clarify which Judge Dredd. Because they both turn up.
That's true.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. By 2000 AD's Judge Dredd.
Yes.
And he calls him a Nancy boy. So he's been racially abused and homophobically abused. And Leo gets him confused with RoboCop, which angers him.
Better than that, before he says, I know who you are, you're RoboCop, when he says, I'm Judge Dredd, he says, what, the old white guy who sings dirty reggae songs?
Yes, I actually looked this guy up. His name was Alexander Minto Hughes.
He was.
And he was the first white reggae artist to have a hit in Jamaica.
Yes.
And I think that's pretty cool.
He's also... he's had more songs banned by the BBC than any other artist. He's basically, he just used to write rude reggae songs about sex.
Good.
His most well-known song was Up With The Cock.
Lovely.
And he's, amazingly, he was second only to Bob Marley in UK reggae record sales in the 1970s. Which Amazing. Unfortunately says a lot about the fucking UK public in the 70s. Because there was so much amazing reggae around. Why weren't you all buying Toots and the Maytals, you twats?
But that fella actually turns up and it's him.
Yep.
It's brilliant.
He looks fairly old there, but yeah. I'm sure he didn't pass away until a lot longer.
It was about 2001, I think.
Yeah, he died on stage, didn't he? He was like,
I think so.
Mid-song. Which is the way I think any singer would probably want to go.
And this man was known as the king of all the rude boys. So from now on, I'm going to refer to them as Judge Dredd and Rude Boy Judge Dredd, just to make this clear.
That works.
Before we talk about Rude Boy Judge Dredd further, I want to highlight another fucking line about racism. Holy shit.
Oh.
When he finds out that Judge Dredd is a police officer...
Yeah.
He says, you're not going to plant drugs on me and arrest me, are you?
Beat me up, plant drugs on me and arrest me, which, yeah.
Oh, my.
And again, Judge Dredd doesn't really give him a definite answer as to what he's going to do.
Yeah. No. And I think when you think this was made in 1993, and then you look at the figures of who... gets stopped and searched in 2021, things have not fucking changed.
No, no. And I believe that was probably fairly strong in the consciousness of the world at the time because it was not that long after the LA riots, which was 92, which started from police brutality on a black guy that was basically not... the police basically thought he was in the wrong place at the wrong time and beat the shit out of him. And it was on camera. They got caught out, and people rightfully fucking rise up against the police.
And now we're not even allowed to protest, apparently.
Well, it's going to fucking happen. Protest will always happen.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a bunch of women got beaten up by the police and it was really bad for the police. And now we're not allowed to protest at all because we made the police look bad because they beat up a bunch of women. What a load of fucking shit.
Yes. This is us being left-wing woke snowflakes again, isn't it?
Mate, I just don't understand. I don't understand. The world is fucking broken.
It is, anyway. But there's a lot of good things in it as well, so we need to focus.
True. And one of them is watching Old Tat from 1993.
Yes.
So all three of them argue, and Rude Boy Judge Dredd advises Leo that the way to talk to girls and the way to impress them is to talk dirty to them.
He says it in a really weird voice, though.
The two
almost like he's talking dirty to Leo. Like, talk dirty to them. Right.
I think this is again down to the fact that none of these people are, most of these people aren't fucking actors. They're just his mates.
Yeah. The two Judge Dredds absolutely hated each other.
Really?
In real life on set. I don't know if Rude Boy Judge Dredd thought that that was actual Judge Dredd rather than an actor dressed up as him and was annoyed because they did get the name from him. They did steal his name for the comic book character. Because he was already well known in the public consciousness. He was selling lots of records before the first Judge Dredd comic appeared and before 2000 AD was out, I think.
Good grief.
Late 70s, I believe. I think it was about 78, 79 that the character Judge Dredd had his first appearance. And yeah, because of that, I don't know if he's taking offence to that. But yeah, apparently they didn't get on. And when they were trading insults, old white reggae dude Judge Dredd completely forgot his lines and just went, "Tosser," which they had to cut.
Initially, when Judge Dredd walked on, the 2000 AD Judge Dredd, I was like, oh, tie in with the Smegazine.
That's how he got in there.
Yeah.
Huh.
Was it Fleetway?
It was.
Yeah. Mm. I was like, oh.
It's not anymore, but yeah, it was at the time.
I was like, oh, what? That's quite. And the magazine does appear at one point.
Yes, it does.
You've also got Mike Butcher, the editor at the time of this magazine, and Colin Howard, who was the artist for some of the comics, and also Jane Killick, who wrote the majority of the articles in the magazine. All of the sort of reportery type stuff she wrote are all in the video as well.
Are they in the Red Dwarf posse that turns up at the end?
Mike Butcher and Colin Howard are. Jane Killick is an extra in the background on a phone when it's the behind-the-scenes filming-y type bit.
Right, okay.
Leo is woken up by his boss and the clients again. The boss introduces Andrew de Byrony, and Kit, the woman, disses Andrew and asks Leo on a date. He's then racially abused and told to get rid of the cat.
Andrew de Byrony is played by Wayne Morris, as he was known at the time, actually Adam Morris, who's Robin Hood out of Maid Marian and Her Merry Men.
Yeah.
I did spot that, but I thought I'd let you point that out because you like it and I think it's a bit dull. I'm
going to fucking fight you on that when we record the episode on it.
He's playing a very good, like, public schoolboy tosser.
He is.
Yeah.
He's not a million miles away from his character as Robin Hood either.
Well, no, but in the Robin Hood one, there's a lovability about
him. Yeah, he's nicer. Yeah, definitely.
Because he's a bit dim. In this, he's just a prick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he says, "What's your name?" "I'm Spike Lee." And initially, my brain had gone, was that supposed to be a joke that his name's actually Spike Lee as well? Or there was like, oh no, it's him being racist. I generally thought that they'd done it as a gag. That, oh no, my name's Spike Lee. I was like, okay. It's just, yeah. But this is where I started to get confused a bit, because Kit's reactions every time they do the wake up and repeat go from, I think he's quite cute, which is a weird thing to say as the first thing you say when you meet somebody.
Yeah.
And you're talking about them in the third person when they're there. And then there's ones where she just completely dismisses him. So I won't go out with anyone with hair on the face. Is another one. And I got
disgraceful
to the point,
prejudice that.
Exactly. And I got to the point of like, which one is real?
I don't think anyone, including Danny John Jules, knows. This is all over the place.
I kept thinking this was Jacob's ladder. Just like, which one of these scenarios is actually real?
Probably none of them.
Mulholland Drive is the one that was springing to mind for me.
Yeah.
With you know, the movie that, when it came out on DVD, actually had a set of clues to try and help you understand what the fuck was going on in the film.
Oh, I need to watch that again. I haven't watched that.
This
in a long
is
time.
Not a David Lynch comparable film.
It is. It is just like it. Just like it. Exactly the same.
If you try hard enough, Mark, everything's a David Lynch comparable film.
I'm going to move on because this is ludicrous. Leo is approached by two guys in green suits who are looking for his boss. They're called Mega and Screwface.
Yes. I spent ages trying to work out who these guys were because I'd assumed that they were Ragga stars of the day.
Yeah, so I thought that, yeah.
I'd been Googling Screwface and Mega and trying to find various people. They're definitely character names. And then when I finally found the smegazines that are talking about it, it doesn't actually name them. I believe from the credits they are T, brackets, Funky Dread, and possibly Wayne Brown. And they are definitely, we don't know their names for definite, but they're definitely two of Danny John Jules' mates that he used to go raving with.
Right.
Brilliant. I love that you wasted your time trying to find these guys. That's
and it's
funny.
Just some of his mates.
Good.
When they sort of went, oh, my name's Screwface, and then they cut to like a really extreme close-up of Screwface like puckering his lips, but like really pushing them out. I was like, is he called Screwface because he's like really like screwing his lips up to push them out? And I was trying to work it out for about 5 minutes.
I don't think there's anything to work out, Carl.
No, it was just such a weird close-up to cut straight. It wasn't like just a shot of the head. It was like completely like bridge of the sunglasses with top of the frame. I was like, that's a bit of an extreme close-up for that, just for him to pull that face.
I'm just loving the fact that when these people recorded this, a lot of them at the time, when they just turned up on the day and were given lines that mean pretty much nothing and it's completely all over the place. At the time, did they think that in 28 years' time, there would be a podcast with three blokes just trying to critically analyse and work out the deep and hidden meaning behind the cat's tongue-tied video? I hope they did. I hope they realised at the time that it would reach this pinnacle of achievements.
And I don't want to worry you, but we've gone over 50 minutes on this recording and we're about halfway through.
Yep. Damn right we are.
There's just so much to say about this weird-ass fucking thing. So I'm going to try and push it along. The three of them discuss Kit and where Leo should take her on the date. Turns out that Mega is Tabby Ranks' manager, and then the black cat returns, and Leo picks her up, and it fades. And I'm like, what the fuck? Honestly, if you've got to this point in this podcast, and you wonder what the actual fuck we are talking about because you've not watched the video.
Watch it.
It is 25 minutes of your life that you won't get back, but you might not regret watching because it's so utterly bizarre.
I want this to be something that somebody watches and it to be the most meaningful thing that they've ever seen. And it's like an epiphany for them. And they're like, now I understand the universe.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen, is it?
You just haven't cracked it, Mark. That's you're that just right? Not quite there yet. You've got to be in exactly the right mindset. And when you watch it, you've got to tune into it. You've got to completely let yourself go.
At this point, I was just watching it, and as soon as the black cat appeared, I was like, oh, Kitty, because that's all I was getting out of it.
At least now we know, Colin, what we need to do if we ever need to distract Mark from something.
We knew that
you
anyway.
You already knew this.
Throw a cat at him.
Yeah.
Oh, I like cats.
Have you seen the dog in Up when they see a squirrel? Mark's a bit like that, but with cats.
Doug.
I really am. So the other day I was driving home with my partner and
just veered the car off the road.
Well, so it wasn't a cat, yeah. But I also really like foxes because they look like a dog, but they move like a cat.
Is that a bit like turkey ham? Mm.
Yeah, yeah. So this, bearing in mind this was on a dual carriageway, there was a fox and I slowed down and I went, oh, it's a fox. And Pete looks at me and goes, speed the fuck up, Mark. But there was a fox.
What was the last thing he said before the accident? I believe he yelled kitty very loudly and just drove off the side of the road.
In my 20s, it used to be hot guys. Now it's fucking cats and foxes.
How long till you start up a cat-based podcast?
I have thought about it. I've genuinely thought about it.
Podcat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just 20 minutes of you going, but they're great, aren't they? They're so great. And just that's all you say for 20 minutes.
I'm not subscribing to that one. All the others I've done, but no, I'm drawing the line at that.
Oh, dear. Anyway, the next day, the studio is being used for the Tabby Ranks music video recording, and Leo is watching on. We then get the Tabby Ranks video.
A couple of things about this. One is, when does Leo go home?
I think it's kind of low-key suggested that he's kind of homeless and lives there.
Yeah, but then the other thing is when... I can't remember the Andy, the director, when he's about to. I don't think he says action. He says give it lots of sex.
Yes,
which as a direction is fabulous.
When you actually think that this guy was really only known as a lead character in a kids' TV show, this is quite subversive as well.
Yeah, give it lots of sex.
I think I've just cracked something.
I don't think you have. I think you've tried to rationalise something is what you've done.
No, you just said, so when does Leo go home? Leo is not only there the whole time, he is omnipresent. The whole point of this video, Leo is God.
Oh, and, for fuck's sake.
And it's an allegory about the deterioration of the universe. This is God's own sanity unravelling. It's incredibly deep. You just don't understand it, Mark.
Or it's where the people who wrote Lost got the ending from, and it's purgatory.
Ah, spoilers.
Fucking hell.
This is deeper than Lost.
Yeah.
Oh, shut
it's
up.
It's not hard to get deeper than Lost.
Oh, Latham's going to be so cross with you.
8 series, and it was the thing everybody went, oh, it's probably this in the first series.
Good, I don't have to continue watching it now.
Danny John Jules plays Tabby Ranks, who has Lennon glasses, a huge medallion and teeth grills. And this is just a soulless, fucking awful version of both the song and the video for the single version. It's just irredeemably cack.
I'll give him credit. He went to the trouble of having Tabby shaved into the back of his head.
He did.
Which
he did.
Means that, because he's got like the I was going to say pointed flat top, that doesn't make sense, but he's got the kind of Belle Biv DeVoe kind of new edition flat top sort of slant. And then he's got it shaved into the back of his head, Tabby, which means after this, he definitely must have had to shave his head and have short hair for a while.
Yeah.
So he's willing to put his own appearance on the line for the video, which shows how much he's putting into it. But yeah, it's turgid dross. It's absolutely awful.
It really is. It's unsalvageable.
It's the thing though. In the early 90s, you could get away with this almost because rave culture and club culture was so big. You just had to put like as when we hear the quote unquote dance remix later on in the video. You just had to put like a weird beat that people on ecstasy would still dance to.
You've got to put a donk on it.
Yeah, you've got to put a donk on it. And then it's fine. It'll get released. But in this case, It's so bad. It's almost like they've gone to a distinct effort to be this bad.
Honestly, I thought that it was taking the piss because it was so bad, but I've changed my mind. No. I think it is just bad.
They put enough effort in for it to be good and then carried on going to ruin it.
So, you know, I adore a B-movie. I love bat films that are so bad that they're good. Something like The Room, that was done earnestly, and it was funny because it was so bad. The man's vision was batshit crazy. But then you watch something like A Nymphoid Barbarian in Dinosaur Hell, which tries to be bad, and it just makes it unwatchable and unfunny and just terrible. And with a name like A Nymphoid Barbarian in Dinosaur Hell, it should be the best film of all time, but it is not.
Nothing's going to live up to that name, though, is it?
No.
Thankfully, and thank goodness, the Tabby Ranks video is cut short by Andrew, who, you know, calls for a cut. And then Kit collects Leo for their date and kisses him. And you know what? Thank fuck. And I've written in my notes, shit Groundhog Day.
It's weird though, isn't it? Because he remembers like every iteration of this happening, like, oh, what happened to our date yesterday? And she's got no idea. And you're almost thinking, like, if I'm reliving the same day over and over again, that date didn't happen. Why am I saying to this person, why, where were you? Yes. Because he says, where were you? It's like, well, it didn't happen unless she stood you up the same day, which we never see in the video.
No. And so, Leo is woken up by his boss and the clients again, blah, blah, blah. And he asks why she... I'm losing the will to live here. He asks why she stood him up. And then he gets confused. It's clear that he woke up from a dream. Yeah. It's obvious. And then they mention Tabby's manager and Leo remembers them. He's racially abused and told to get rid of the cat. For fuck's sake.
This is like the third time now. This was like, do you have to repeat that line again? It's just fair enough. If you want to, make a statement about racism and that, you've kind of done that. But when it gets to the third time, it's like, I think you've said it enough now.
It does feel like overly labouring the point.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of loses it a bit towards the end because you've got the humour of repetition, but that doesn't work if you're trying to relate a message, if you know what I mean. You know, in Groundhog Day, you wake up every day and he does various things differently and this, that and the other, and it's funny and it conveys a message. In this, he wakes up and every single day the same things happen and he doesn't really react any differently. He still lets them racially abuse him, and it's quite weird and jarring in places. Yeah.
Leo talks to the cat and asks the cat if he's going mad. We are talking about the black cat, to make that clear, Colin. Kit returns, and Leo speculates that he's tripping on spiked milk. Kit then asks if there's a rave on, but she's a week early. She then asks him out. And then Mr. Walker appears and fires him. He tells Mr. Walker he's going out, and Walker tells him to get back to the ghetto. Ugh.
This bit got me because Kit walks in and says she's here for a rave. Has he woken up again? Has he? Because she seems to be a different person now. She's not here for the video. She's here for a rave, but she's a week early. This is in my notes. I've actually written, what the hell happened there? It just becomes like this series of edits, and all of them are in close-up, which is really weird. And then it just stops. It just fades out.
The one redeeming feature of this weird-as-fuck scene is that the response to the ghetto abuse is actually quite good. He says, it's not where you live, it's how you live. And I like that. Yeah. That was actually very good.
Yeah.
But fucking hell.
And this is where we get to the climax of it, which is he goes clubbing with Kit. He doesn't really change clothes. He goes in his dungarees that he's had on the whole time.
We've missed the Red Dwarf crew.
Yeah, right. Let's cover that. The Red Dwarf Posse, which is a group of people led by a small person in a red T-shirt, rush in and collect the cat.
Do you know who that small person is?
He's Little John in Maid Marian, isn't he?
Little Ron.
Little Ron, sorry.
Yeah, Mike Edmonds, who's a fucking legend. He's Little Ron in Maid Marian and Her Merry Men, obviously. But he was also Logray, the Ewok shaman in Return of the Jedi.
I was going to say, well, I'm sure he's in Star Wars, but I couldn't remember what he was.
Yep, Logray.
Yeah.
The shaman of my people.
Yeah, it's really weird because it's a random... Because if you watch Maid Marian or you're familiar with like anything Danny John Jules, you knew who that was.
Yep.
And they ruined it, but it's like, oh, that's random for 10 seconds.
And also, I did question whether or not this might be a little bit 90s ick, the fact that the Red Dwarf Posse is led by a man with dwarfism in a red T-shirt.
I believe that's the implication. I think that's what he's referring to.
I didn't actually twig that until you said it.
I think, you know, I would probably use the term little people, but I don't know anyone who has dwarfism to be able to ask.
I know a dwarf and he prefers dwarf.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I once got quite drunk with him. I was drunk to the point where I was head on the bar drunk.
Good.
And I just, we both worked at a bar and it was closing time and I was sort of drinking and I put my head down. And somebody came up and called him a midget. And he says, you'll never forget me, just sort of like, all of a sudden this grumpy bear raised its head next to him and looked at this person and went, he's not a midget, he's a dwarf.
Brilliant.
And he turned around and pat me on the shoulder, like, that's good, Carl, thanks. Thanks, man. Go back to sleep.
I love that you are friends with someone who has dwarfism because, you know, you're not a small fella.
And no.
That, the idea of you two being like buds, it just warms my heart.
I haven't seen him in a while, but he's a lovely chap. He's an actor as well. He was in Little Britain and what else has he been in? He's been in a lot. So he was in Game of Thrones.
Good. I'm glad he's been in something not fucking terrible and racist and bigoted and homophobic.
Oh yeah, the whole sketch in Little Britain was the employment character.
Right, yeah.
He was in there, but he was in his like panto special drama thing. And if you keep an eye on him, Dean Watton, he's turned up in a lot of bits and bobs.
Cool.
Although you can put your foot in it with him sometimes. He went, oh, I've got a panto. Oh yeah, as what?
Fuck's sake.
Genuinely asked him. I was like, oh, what has? And he just looked at me.
Fuck's sake, Carl.
It's a genuine question. But if they might have cast against type.
Yeah.
Maybe.
There's nothing wrong with it.
They hadn't cast against type, though, had they, Carl?
No, he's a dwarf.
No. Anyway, the little Ron, I'm going to call him.
Yeah.
It turns out that the cat belongs to him and... It's called Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Red Dwarf reference, everybody.
The Holy Mother.
What does the Red Dwarf Posse do? Do they, like, go around cleaning up the streets of crime? What can we join or establish a kind of Midlands division of Red Dwarf Posse with our own, like, leather cuts and stuff?
I think we basically are.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
I mean, at least one member of the Red Dwarf Posse edited this magazine, so...
Good point.
I think that's fairly... good credentials for being the Red Dwarf Posse.
Yeah. So, yeah, the pause mix plays over Kit and Leo going out on a date. They laugh, dance and party, but it's super brief. And it might also be the meow mix or the pussy mix. I just lost the will to live.
Right. Now, before we started today, I sent the pair of you a video to watch.
You did.
Which is a Key and Peele sketch called The Power of Wings.
Yes.
Which is a music video by one of the recurring characters. And
I'll stick it on the social media.
Yeah, if you pop on the social media. But in the corner is the budget for the video, and it's ticking down. And it looks really good up until it hits zero, and then he has to recreate it with, like, stuff in his garden. Like, the main actress is replaced by a toy held close to the camera and all this. And this bit where they go raving is, right, this, to me, was that moment.
We're going to do it anyway. We might as well film it, stick it on the end of the video. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was like, we're right. We need to do the rave scene. Oh, we've run out of money and we can't really... We haven't got permission. That was the big thing I thought. It's like, you have not got permission to go in this club. and the quality of the camera footage as well. It's like, you have taken somebody's VHS-C or Hi8 camera, like camcorder, and gone down the club and snuck it in. Because it just looks like... Because a lot of it is Danny, right in Danny John Jules' face. If you notice, there's a bit, and I think it's in the behind the scenes as well. They show some footage, and it's just him like right in the camera, just sort of grooving and pulling faces. And it's just like, you just went down with your mate's camera and shot this bit down the club thinking it was going to be okay. And you can't fix it in editing, not in 1993.
Yeah. I did genuinely enjoy this. Yeah. I did. But it is batshit crazy.
Yeah.
Right, we're nearly there. The lady, there's a lady cuddling a black cat, and she explains that Tongue Tied was in series 2 of Red Dwarf and what Red Dwarf is. And then there's like a little documentary on the video production and stuff.
Yeah, it's making and, of, isn't it?
Yeah, and so there's chats with actors behind the scenes, silly skits, and the cat cuddle lady's narrating it all.
It comes across like they copied and pasted this from BBC Culture Show, just from the way the host is. It like it's a panel piece from the one show or something like that that they've put on the end of the videotape, but it's actually made by them.
Yeah, because she explains what Red Dwarf is. Nobody who bought this video didn't know what Red Dwarf was.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the cover was interesting, but not to the point where you're like, I'm going to pick this up not knowing what it is.
Yeah.
And there's some really interesting insight as well. You know, like Danny John Jules discusses how the cat moves and that he's based on James Brown, Little Richard and Richard Pryor. That's cool.
That section is amazing. Danny John Jules says, he's talking about how he came up with how he'd play the cat, and he says it's a mixture of four different people. Movement is James Brown, the look is Little Richard, and the facial expressions are Richard Pryor. Now, did they cut the footage there and not tell us the fourth one, or did he just not tell people who the fourth one is?
Or maybe the fourth one was himself.
It's possible, but he definitely did not elaborate on that.
No.
It is the most interesting bit, is him talking about how he goes about it.
Obviously, Little Richard and James Brown are fairly obvious, but Richard Pryor I'd not particularly noticed before. And he's right, the facial expressions are definitely Richard Pryor's reactions and that kind of thing.
There's also some nice stuff about Dwayne Dibley and how he was based on the Nutty Professor, Jerry Lewis. I thought that was cool as well.
And also the reveal that they've hired a makeup lady who hasn't seen Red Dawn.
Yeah, there's a cheap plug for this magazine, like you said. There's like, lol, Craig Charles and Robert Llewellyn mucked about on set, lol. And
part of me feels like Craig Charles and Robert Llewellyn went to the pub before they started because they were nervous about doing it and thought they were going to be there all day and they weren't getting paid. So they had about 6 pints and then turned up and just dicked about.
I mean, yeah. And I think that's the real reason why Robert Llewellyn is human Crichton rather than Crichton, because he just ain't going to get in that fucking makeup for no money.
Yeah. It made me laugh that I was looking at it, and it was this 93, but all I could think was, Craig Charles looks healthy. Like, he looks in really good shape. Just like, because I'm not saying he looks rough. Well, you know, he's obviously aged as we all have, but he looks really young and like, quite bright and thing, and then it's just like time hasn't been that kind over like the next sort of 8 years or so.
He's had a little bit of a excessive lifestyle for some of that time though.
Yeah. There's a note I've got here which is, I love Craig Charles's lovey voice.
Yes.
Hello. I love that voice. He does it a lot in various things.
Yeah, I like these bits because they reminded me a little bit of the Smegouts videos and Smegups.
You could put Robert Llewellyn and Craig Charles doing those characters, almost like the two, was it Statler and Waldorf and the Muppets?
Waldorf and Statler, I love them. When I used to work in a library, there were these two blokes that always turned up with 20 minutes until closing time. They would sit and read the papers and laugh with each other, and they would leave at 1 minute to closing time on the dot every fucking day. And we called them Waldorf and Stadler. That was my coping mechanism when I worked in a library, was cruel nicknames for the regulars who annoyed me.
Whereas me and my mate Dave Malice, when we used to DJ at various gig nights in Tamworth, we used to be in a DJ booth at the side and be commenting on the bands half the time, and we earned a reputation as being Sattler and Waldorf.
Brilliant.
Is his real name Dave Malice?
Yeah.
That's a great
name.
That's
a good
name. It's M-A-L-Y-S. It's a Polish name.
That makes it even better. It makes him sound like a rapper.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lad who works at our place who's joined. Lovely guy, really sweet, soft-spoken, lovely guy, but his name's Stephen Fury.
Is he related to Nick?
Oh, if only. But I just remember, like, somebody came up to me and was like, why can't you call him Stephen? It's like, because his last name's Fury. You call him Fury. He's like, he's fine about it, so who cares? If my last name was Fury, you wouldn't call me Carl. No one would ever call me Carl.
I had a friend years ago whose surname was Death.
But he used to insist
that it was pronounced Diath.
Yeah.
He should have become a judge.
She should have.
I went to school. I went to college with a guy whose last name was Arse.
It can't be.
You can't get through school if you're called Arse.
Nah, I went to college with somebody called, his last name was Arse.
Amazing.
He was surprisingly plastered.
The worst one I ever saw was when I was working in a school of languages. I worked for the section on English as a foreign language, and we got a lot of applicants from Nigeria. And there was a fella from Nigeria who used to phone me on a regular basis, and his surname was spelt Shitty. And so when I first got his application, I was like, it can't be pronounced Shitty. And he phones me up and he goes, hello, Mr. Mark, it's Mr. Shitty here. And I just, I had to put it on mute.
Yeah.
Mr. Shitty. It wasn't like Shitty or Shitty. It was Shitty.
Why would it be? If he's, you know, if he's from a country where English isn't the main language, then that wouldn't necessarily be the case.
But he obviously knew some English because he could phone me up and say, hello, Mr. Mark, it's Mr. Shitty.
He shouldn't have to change his name.
No, but Mr. Shitty, poor sod.
My old landlord's name legitimately was Ron McDonald. And he was selling the house, and I was like serving my notice and about to move out, but I was dealing with people coming to view it. And at one point, I had to ring the estate agents for something because they wanted to reschedule. I said, oh, it's for this property. Oh, no, we can't find it. So, well, it's on this bit. No, we can't find that. Guy's name's Ronald McDonald. I literally heard him go, oh, him. And they thought it was a gag. They were like, we didn't think that was real. I was like, no, it's real.
Anyway, the cast and crew say goodbye and wave, and the credits run over the pussy mix. We did it.
And did you see what the backing dancers are called?
No.
The pussies.
Of course they were.
And the kittens, I think the kids were called.
Yeah.
We did it.
Yeah, we did.
We did.
Fuck's sake. Do you know, of all the stuff that we've done as a special, this one is not the one I expected to run for nearly 90 minutes.
I mean, a good 60 of it is off the rails.
Yes, but that's thematic with the actual video itself.
True.
Well said, Colin. Right, well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me. Colin, where can people find you? On the internet.
You can find me on... I've got two podcasts other than this. We Dig Music. And I've got Free With This Month's Issue. They're good. You should listen to them. Yeah, you can find them by searching for them. Or my Twitter is @MogwaiFearSatan.
Carl, what about you?
I'm pretty much only on this one at the moment, but I will be probably doing some more bits and bobs soon. But you can find everything I'm up to at allmylinks.com/Mr. Carl, and it's the unabbreviated MISTER.
If you're looking for me, it's at MarkAdamsHC on Twitter and Instagram. I do a lot of podcasts. I'm going to highlight two because this has already run very, very long. The first one is Chucky Vision, which is a new podcast about the Child's Play and Chucky franchise, where we've just looked at all seven of the original Child's Play films. And then we're going to go weekly looking at the episodes of the new Chucky TV series. So it's a dedicated Chucky podcast because why the fuck not? Chucky's cool. If you're interested in that, just search for Chucky Vision on your favorite podcast sites. And we're on Twitter at Chucky Vision. The other one we recorded last summer was a podcast called Aunt Nell, which is a podcast about Polari, which is a cant language used by gay people, which historically was used to protect them, is now kind of used for campery, if I'm being honest. And I'm coming at it from a linguistic point of view, a fascination with the idea of a cant language. But I've got a drag queen and a gay bar owner as my co-hosts, and they come at it because they literally speak Polari all the time. And it's a little podcast about the history of the language and, yeah, what each word means. And we have a chat and it's really camp and it's lots of fun. That's called Aunt Nell, a podcast about Polari. Again, have a look on your favorite podcast provider or follow us on Twitter at Aunt Nell Pod.
Awesome.
So, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me for this episode of Shipwrecked and Comatose. And thank you to everyone who's actually managed to get this far through the tat. Do you know what? I fucking love the specials, but they do feel a little bit like an indulgence.
You planned them.
Yeah.
I did.
Could be the first time when Mark's master plan of doing specials has turned around and slightly bit him in the arse.
At least not the first time that's happened. Have you not watched Gappa the Trifibian Monster?
Also, at least it's not the fucking AA adverts yet.
Oh, that's been your future, Colin.
It's not.
It's in mine.
I've got so many other fucking specials I'm down for that I couldn't do that one.
Oh, what a shame.
To give context to listeners, there will be one of the AA adverts coming up. And in our group chat, Kurt, who'll be hosting that one, was like, oh, we've got the AA specials. It was and immediately Mark's like, well, I can't do this one because of that. And then Colin was like, I can't do this one because of that. And then the phrase, well, that only leaves one person then, doesn't it? And then a long pause as it just sunk in that it was me.
Yeah, because Matt already said he was doing it.
That was the one that got voted by the listeners. We were absolutely certain they were going to vote for the pornography.
Yeah.
And they threw us a massive curveball. And I'd love to say I feel guilty about the fact that I put that poll up, but I don't. I think it's fucking hilarious.
Oh, dear. Anyway,
yeah. Until next time.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch some AA adverts, man.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at wemadethispod.
Hello everyone, this is Tony, Network Chief of We Made This. As you know, our podcast network brings together a brilliant assortment of talent who talk about all kinds of pop culture content, such as the episode you've just listened to. We're not going anywhere, but we'd love to keep the lights on for even longer if you're able to support our network on Patreon. For just £2 a month, you get your name in lights and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping us produce more great audio. And for £3 a month, you'll get your name in lights, but you'll also get access to an exclusive bi-monthly podcast from the We Made This talent pool on podcasting, pop culture, and, well, you tell us. We'll take your suggestions. For less than the price of a coffee per month, you can help keep We Made This going. Just head to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. That's patreon.com/WeMadeThis. And get the ball rolling.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Chucky Vision.
That's the biggest difference, I think, between all the other franchises, is that they all start, you know, the first Nightmare on Elm Street is Wes Craven's idea. The first Halloween is John Carpenter's vision.
Yeah.
Whereas Child's Play starts off this studio film, almost. And then as it goes on, they give more and more free rein to the creator, and it becomes its own thing.
Yeah, and I think that's more likely what we'll see with the Chucky TV series, which is basically the reason why we started doing this podcast.
Observing the Pattern, a fringe podcast.
I think the complete opposite to seeing yourself represented would be to see yourself overrepresented and just have it lashed into your face that there's a disabled person on the screen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, oh, look, this person's gay. We're going to tell you that he's gay every time he's on the screen. You know, that's not okay. Just let them be there, man. That's how it is in real life. They're just there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think she plays it very well.
Pretty Fly, a 90s nostalgia podcast.
No, but she seems so lovely about it. It was like, that's my name, don't wear it out. And I'm like, ha ha, funny.
That's what mums do. They're lovely even when they cut you down. You know, like even with the I'm not angry, I'm disappointed type thing, you know?
I need to go have a serious talk with
my mum. I don't know. I've never met Mrs. Nicholson, so it might be worth exploring that.
Yeah, like, hey, mum, in the mid-90s, were you sick of my shit?
Did you hate me?
She told me that she loved me, but apparently you fucking hated me, mum, because you said, that's my name, don't wear it out. And you said it so nicely that I thought it was fine, but you lied to me.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.